Hello, everyone. I am Jenna Mendelson from UNC Greensboro, as Matt so aptly introduced, and I will be speaking about the use of hierarchical linear modeling in the assessment of fidelity in a summer program for social competency in youth with ASD. And before I even begin, I want to acknowledge my co-authors on this presentation, Meg Tudor from Stony Brook and Matt Lerner, also from Stony Brook. So everybody here is familiar with the autism spectrum, so you're probably all also very aware that it's a multifaceted disorder that was recently all put under a single umbrella of autism spectrum disorders under the DSM-5. And even under this relatively broad umbrella, social impairment continues to be really a hallmark of an autism spectrum diagnosis. So appropriately, there are a range of social skills interventions that have gained support as an empirically validated treatment for autism spectrum disorders. However, we still don't really know the active ingredients of these treatments. So to begin to think about this question, considering fidelity is really almost an important antecedent ingredient to think about, because we really need to know, are we actually doing the treatment as we set out to do it before we can begin to even consider specific aspects of the treatment. Methodologically, this can actually be complex to even begin to think about, especially when you're dealing with group-based data, where data is nested in groups. So we really need to understand not only what's happening at the individual level, but also what's happening at the group level. So just to go a little more into what fidelity is, broadly, it's the extent to which the intervention is implemented as you intended it. It's a really crucial ingredient in intervention success, and it assesses the continuous relation between therapy components and outcomes. Really, before you can even begin to think about dose testing, so thinking about which ingredients of a treatment are most important, you need to know if you're actually doing the treatment. And it can also be a quality indicator. So, you know, an understanding of fidelity to the treatment allows us to think about whether providers are actually implementing it as intended. So again, it's really valuable in understanding the various components of social skills treatments. And fidelity is often self-reported. We usually look to the provider to say whether or not they implemented the treatment as intended. That is the case with the data I will be presenting, and it kind of raises some interesting questions in terms of the value of observational measures in thinking about fidelity as well. So in this particular demonstration, we really thought about fidelity in two different ways. We thought about manual fidelity, which is basically what it sounds like, the degree to which you are doing what's in the manual. So to give an example, if on day 3 of the treatment, the manual calls for a role play, did you do it? Conceptual fidelity, on the other hand, is the degree to which you adhere to the conceptual principles upon which the treatment is based. So, for example, if you have a treatment where one of the conceptual principles is that the children in your group are having fun, and little Timmy has a crippling anxiety when presented with a role play, you might want to change that aspect of the manual to adhere to the conceptual principle of having fun. So ideally, these two things really should overlap pretty heavily, but situations arise where they do necessarily, it would seem, need to diverge. We also thought about fidelity in terms of early fidelity, so fidelity at the start of treatment, and we conceptualize this as fidelity within the first two sessions, excuse me. We also thought about change in fidelity, so the degree to which fidelity increases or decreases over the course of treatment. And both of these are really important factors to consider, as fidelity really is a dynamic construct. It's not stable, it could conceivably change. Early fidelity may be indicative of the degree to which your therapists really get the treatment that they're implementing and can portend how things go going forward. On the other hand, increases and decreases in fidelity could be indicative of changes at the group level, maybe, that require, you know, differences in the way the treatment plays out, or it could mean, you know, therapists that are getting a better grasp on the treatment as it goes on. So we considered fidelity in the context of sociodramatic affective relational intervention, or SDARI for short. Starry was kind of a great forum for thinking about fidelity because it has clear manual and conceptual components. So in terms of the manual, there is a manualized treatment that involves specific games. And they are geared to map onto conceptual principles, including the use of person-specific developmentally appropriate motivators and positive social reinforcement and relationship building. So you see we've got this manual, and then we've got these kind of more fluid key concepts underlying the manual. And Starry is also great to begin to think about mechanisms of effectiveness because it's been found to be effective across a range of summer community-based trials where it sort of played out like a day camp. It's had promising findings in terms of improvements in emotion recognition, parent-reported social skills, and decreases in social problems versus treatment as usual. It's also shown promising findings in terms of randomized controlled trials, in terms of functional communication at school and friendship and social interaction preference after school. So we know it's working, but we don't really know how. So again, it's really ideal because it has a clear underlying theory as well as a manual, and there's evidence that we know it's working. And for the purpose of this presentation, in terms of outcomes, the ones that we chose to think about were reciprocated friendships and social preference. So in terms of hypotheses, we hypothesized that both early manual and conceptual fidelity would each predict increases in reciprocated friendships and social preference. And we also hypothesized that increased conceptual and manual fidelity would both predict increases in both reciprocal friendships and social preferences. So basically, more of each would lead to more of all the outcomes. In terms of participants, they were 34 youth, and this is out of a total of 76 Starry attendees. Those were the 34 who opted to participate in the research components. You could see they kind of fall all over the autism spectrum, and 20 had participated in Starry in the past. In terms of the staff, there were 23 staff members, so this kind of broke down into 8 groups with 3 staff members each. And they all had relatively high levels of training. You could see, that most had at least some college and some even had post-college degrees. So in terms of the treatment, Starry is a 6-week, 29-session, kind of a summer day camp type of a treatment, where each day a different of the 29 goals is addressed. And you can see those are listed are some of the activities that speak to the goals of the treatment. So in terms of measuring fidelity, to measure manual fidelity, we did this in a pretty straightforward way. It was just a binary response. Did you do the activities on this day? Yes or no. Therapists indicated yes or no, whether they did it. And we calculated a proportion of the activities that they actually did. In terms of conceptual fidelity, we developed a 25-item, 5-point Likert rating scale designed to map onto what were determined to be the 25 key conceptual principles of the treatment. And those are some examples right there. And in terms of early and change in fidelity, early fidelity was conceptualized as the average of the first 2 initial sessions in terms of both manual and conceptual fidelity, and change was calculated via empirical Bayes residual of fidelity over time. So in terms of friendship making, we used a sociometric measure. Basically, we asked the children, who are your friends? And we kept track of who nominated who, and we calculated what proportion of these nominations were reciprocated. And we did this also in terms of social preference, so who do you like? So in terms of the data analytic plan, we began by running descriptive analyses, which allowed us to determine whether hierarchical linear modeling would be appropriate. And we deemed it was, so we went forward with multi-level modeling. And that allowed us to account for nesting in groups, control for ASD severity, and control for the baseline value of each outcome measure. And so this is our algebraic model you could see up there. So you could see level 1 is the individual level, and here this is the model for social preference. We ran the identical one for reciprocated friendships. And at level 2, we have our group level processes. So we have in there early manual fidelity, early conceptual fidelity, change in manual fidelity, and change in conceptual fidelity. And here are some of the results. So, looking on what should be the right side of the screen, no, the left side of the screen at the top, that is the level 2 interclass coefficient for reciprocated friendship at baseline. And so you could see at baseline, group level processes accounted for 73% of the variance in reciprocated friendship. Below it is this level 2 interclass coefficient for reciprocated friendship at the end point. And you could see by the end, only 45% of that variance was at the group level. So this suggests maybe some groups were kind of clicky at the beginning, because what this means is that at the beginning, the variance in reciprocated friendships was greater between groups than it was within groups. And it looks like this changed over time. And that also makes sense, because friendships can take time. So maybe some of the kids that didn't know each other so well became friends over the course of treatment, and that number kind of evened out. And on the right side of your screen, you could see the level 2 interclass coefficient for social preference. So social preference at level 2, group level processes accounted for 41% of the variance in social preference. And that didn't change as much over the course of treatment. It only went up a little to about 50% of the variance. So again, that also kind of makes sense, because liking can be a more stable variable. Kids who liked each other at the beginning, that variance kind of remained relatively stable over the course of treatment. So these are the results in terms of manual and conceptual fidelity. And you can see that the group level accounted for 0.09% of the variance in manual fidelity, which means it was administered relatively consistently between the groups. In terms of conceptual fidelity, 29% of that variance was explained at the group level, which actually suggests that therapists were hopefully relatively honest in their ratings of conceptual fidelity. That variance means they were actually saying also when they didn't adhere to some of the conceptual principles. So here are the findings. So you could see early and increased manual fidelity was predictive of increased reciprocated friendships. And if you look at this, the colors break down, those are quartiles in terms of degree of increase in manual fidelity, with the green being the group that showed the greatest increase, the red, the middle group, and the blue, the group that showed the least increase. You can see this falls out pretty much according to our hypotheses, where both early and increased manual fidelity clearly predicts reciprocated friendships. However, increased conceptual fidelity actually predicted a decrease in reciprocated friendships, and this is directly counter to our hypotheses. And again, this is broken down by quartiles, so you could see the blue group is actually the group that showed the lowest increase in conceptual fidelity, and they actually show the greatest increase in reciprocated friendships. So some interesting counterintuitive findings here. And also, as predicted, early manual fidelity predicted increased social preference, as you can see. And once again, the blue is the lowest quartile, the red is the middle quartile, and the green is the upper quartile in terms of early manual fidelity. So what does this all mean? Well, we did this mainly as a proof of concept, just to demonstrate how hierarchical linear modeling can be useful in shedding light on group level processes, because really you could see a significant portion of the variance was accounted for at the group level. Had we just looked at this in terms of individuals, all that variance would have just been kind of mashed together and left unexplained. Also, interestingly, we found that manual fidelity plays this apparently important role in reciprocated friendships. In terms of early manual fidelity, maybe that means that structure is important early on, which kind of makes sense with some of the things we know about kids with autism spectrum disorders and the need for structure. It could also be indicative of therapist grasp of treatment, so maybe it's extra important that therapists get the treatment early on. Also, it could be indicative of a more coherent group where the kids kind of got along better, so it was easier to just adhere to the manual as planned. Now, this other finding of conceptual fidelity leading to a decrease in reciprocated friendships is kind of tricky to try to figure out. One thing to think about is one of the conceptual principles of STARI is really relationship building between the therapists and the patients, the campers in this case. And so maybe a focus on that principle kind of took away some from reciprocated friendships between the kids. But really, this is a question that kind of still needs to be explained. Also, early manual fidelity was also key in leading to an increase in social preference. So again, suggesting even maybe the content of those early sessions is especially important. And whether this is specific to Starry or something that generalizes to other treatments remains to be seen. These findings can't really be taken as a statement on manual and conceptual and early and change infidelity. They really need to be replicated. But it raises an interesting question in terms of the degree of flexibility that there really is in fidelity. So, you know, I think there's kind of a nice intuitive feeling that if you really understand the treatment and you adhere to the conceptual principles, that there's some flexibility there where you can change things as needed. And these findings seem to suggest otherwise. So that's kind of important to think about, an important jumping off point for future research. So there were some limitations to this study, not the best characterized population, pretty heterogeneous. I don't know if you noticed, but there was one kid who had just an ADHD diagnosis up there. Also, 20 of the kids had past experience with the group, which also, you know, may have impacted their performance in the group. The sample size within the groups was relatively small. There was no comparison intervention. And, of course, we were relying on a self-report of fidelity. So in terms of future directions, it would be great to consider additional outcomes, because bear in mind, this is the role of early and change and manual and conceptual fidelity, specifically in terms of reciprocated friendships and social preference. We really don't know what they're doing in terms of other targeted outcomes of this treatment. And we also don't know if this is the role of these various aspects of fidelity more broadly, or if this is really only applicable to Starry. Also, as I mentioned earlier, it would be important to try to incorporate an observational fidelity measure so that there's some more objectivity there. And as I also already mentioned, examination in other social skills programs. So thank you all very much for your attention, and thank you to my co-authors who were instrumental in putting this presentation together.
We have lots of time for questions for Jennifer. I wonder how good clinicians are at reporting on their own conceptual fidelity, especially when it needs manual deviation. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you've given any thought to any kind of independent measure of fidelity on both sides rather than relying on a clinician report, and what you think, how you think that would affect your results.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Even the idea of trying to put the conceptual principles in a rating scale was kind of novel. And I think that is something that I wonder if, you know, do people really diverge for the purpose of the conceptual principles with a clear understanding of what they are first? I think even rating them is helpful. So I think, yes, that's a great idea and something to think about for clinical applications as well.
One thing to also note about this particular scale is it was at least designed to not be face value. We did some testing of that. So there are a number of items that were reverse score, a number of items that the demand characteristics of a fidelity measure are such that typically asking you if you're doing more of the thing that I think you can do is something that somebody's probably going to want to say yes to. And so we try, it's hard, but we try to design it such that there were at least some loaded items that seemed to go the other way. And we had some of it, if that was the case, still your point is okay.
It was 0.29 at the group level. Yeah.
This is a related question. I know it's a small table, but was there a relationship between conceptual fidelity and treatment fidelity?
And the manual fidelity?
Yes.
There wasn't, right? I'm going to defer to Matt on this one, but yeah.
It was a univariate correlation was about 0.3. So not particularly high. Yeah. At least at the same time point, because you looked at the correlation of those changes for it though. other questions? We have, I want to make sure we stay relatively on schedule in case folks are coming in from other sessions. We have about 5 minutes, so if other people have general questions right now, or other questions specifically for Jenna, we can do that a bit, or continue the discussion.
Yeah.
Will you talk a little bit about your, one of your first points, that a lot of the variance was attributable to the group effect, and expand on how much of that variance was attributable to the group effect, and what you mean by that?
In terms of the outcomes? In terms of social preference?
And I think it was friendship rather than policy.
Sure. So as you saw in that, I can go back to that slide too. Oh, so many animations. No, there it is. So you could see at the beginning, 0.73 of the variance in reciprocated friendship was accounted for at the group level. So in interpreting that, it could mean that kids in some groups got along or knew each other or had more friendship than kids in other groups. That variability was greater between groups than it was within the groups. And this might have to do, as I mentioned, with the some kids having done Starry before, so maybe they already knew each other from previously having attended. Yeah.
Did you mean the opposite way? Did you mean to say that there were more variability between groups than within groups?
Yes. Sorry. That is what I meant.
It's also notable. I mean, all of these are an extraordinarily high amount of variance within group, which is exactly what you would expect. With the group level treatment, you know. So, I mean, typically for HLM, we might use a cutoff of 0.1 or 0.08, some might say, to say that's enough group level variance to say that we need to model it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting, you know, 10 times that in some of these models.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess if you have other questions, I can get moving, and we'll have more time for questions at the end. All right, thank you.
Thank you.